Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Every girl has a story to tell. And thanks to the efforts of my guest today, that's very much an option for an underserved segment of the population. After being laid off from her job as a sales executive in 2001, Karen Taylor came up with a proposal for a nonprofit literacy program for teenage girls. She got a grant, and before long, Write Girl, W-R-I-T-E, Girl, was up and running. It matches at-risk 13 to 18-year-old girls in the L.A. area with journalists, authors, poets, screenwriters. And in the years since, it's expanded into schools and education programs for young incarcerated women. But most importantly, according to Karen, the program helps vulnerable kids believe in themselves. The most powerful mentor you can have is your own self-voice. The ability to write well opens doors, and that's why Karen says she focused her nonprofit on the craft. Karen was clearly onto something, so much so that in 2013, Michelle Obama presented the organization with a National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award, the highest honor of its kind. Then this past March, Karen was picked as a CNN hero for her creative efforts to help young people. She's overseen production of more than two dozen Write Girl anthologies, which have received 68 national and international book awards. Some of her other honors include the President's Volunteer Call to Service Award and the Business and Professional Women's Community Woman of Achievement Award. For Karen, who grew up in Vancouver, writing was a big part of her life. She was a voracious reader, devouring hundreds of books a year. She got a bachelor's degree in international relations from the University of British Columbia, a piano performance degree from the Royal Conservatory of Music, Toronto, and a diploma from the American Music and Dramatic Academy in New York City. Karen, welcome, and I couldn't be more excited to have a conversation with you.
Thank you.
What really was the impetus, the catalyst for you to venture into the nonprofit world?
I think there's several things that really propelled me. And one was I was asked to do some songwriting and poetry workshops in New York City. I was at the time a singer-songwriter. And when I went into the Bronx and Brooklyn, Staten Island, New Jersey, and Manhattan, and went into the large public schools and saw the blank look on youth, you know, young people's faces when writing was what we were going to be doing that day, it just really ignited me. I really wanted to be able to bring my passion for writing and for creating to young people who otherwise didn't have that kind of inspiration. So that was really one of the things. I think I was also, you know, at a time in my life where I was really looking at what am I doing, what's important in my life, where do I want to spend my energy? And I think there's nothing better than creating a new community of women and girls to help each other.
So in a way, did you get lucky when you got laid off?
Yes, I would say absolutely. You know, it was a nice opportunity to reflect and think about, you know, what could I do with my life? I mean, you kind of get a blank slate. You get a chance to restart. And I knew going into the corporate world, again, was not where I wanted to go, that I wanted to do something that would really challenge me in a new way, be much more collaborative and creative and inspiring and of service to others. I mean, it was just after 9/11, and I think that wasn't a coincidence. You know, a few months after that, everybody was having those kinds of conversations. Or, you know, what are we doing, and what's important in our world?
Early on in your professional career, your non-corporate career, when you were involved in acting and singing and performance, and you go into the schools, and you're kind of combining the two of them, and then you kind of had to put that on the back burner, didn't you, when you moved from the world of performance into the business world?
Yeah, I did. It was that feeling of, well, I've got to pay the bills. I've got to really, you know, pursue a career that's going to be able to financially support me. And, you know, I ventured into sales and some public relations work and then back into sales. And, you know, I really didn't enjoy it. I knew that it really wasn't for me. It was a paycheck, but it wasn't really for me.
So it's 2001. You're not in New York anymore. You're in L.A. You get the pink slip. And how long after that did you say, I'm going to start a nonprofit?
It was almost right away. I mean, I think, you know, it was a matter of months, maybe not even months, maybe weeks, really. And I put a draft on paper of what I thought the organization could look like. I pulled together some women writers. I put it out on a listserv, and women writers responded right away, got some women together. And within a month, we had a workshop up and running. We had 25 to 30 girls that came that very first workshop. And we've, you know, never looked back since. That was almost 14 years ago.
So when you started and you had this first workshop, it had nothing to do with the schools.
No, it's a completely out-of-school activity. In the after-school arena, the term out-of-school is the term for organizations that are running activities on the weekends or evenings. So we are not really in the schools, although we do now have a schools program where we do bring the program into the school day. So we have a separate program, but our mentoring program is mostly held on the weekends.
But how'd you recruit? How'd you get the girls to come?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, this is a volunteer program for them as well, and we had to really work to promote it to girls. So we went into schools, we talked to English teachers and got permission to go right into the classroom and make presentations to schools. Mostly we were looking for the girls that are underserved, right? The girls that are at schools in L.A., there's schools with 4,000 students.
You mean one high school? One high school services 4,000 kids?
One high school.
Good Lord.
4,300, 3,500. It's enormous. And some of them are now changing all these years later. They're starting to form several schools on one larger school campus. But there's still thousands of students in that one campus. So to be able to offer a program where a girl's going to get one-on-one coaching and be in a community with other girls and women in a more, you know, intimate setting, that's a really powerful thing to offer. So, you know, girls came a little bit with skepticism, like, we don't know what this is, but our teacher really wanted us to come.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have worked very hard to make Right Girl the kind of place where girls really want to come. We call it literacy in disguise. So they don't know that it's all about education, but we do.
You said it was so easy to get a proposal and get some grant money, but you also went into your bank account, didn't you?
Yeah, I think I basically, you know, funded Right Girl for several of us did. Myself as well as my husband, a couple of volunteers stepped up to contribute, and a lot of people, you know, contributed in many, many different ways, including financially, but with food, with journals, with pens, with writing materials, with space, you know. There were a lot of people that really helped contribute to get it off the ground.
How many people were part of your staff in terms of writers, screenwriters, authors, and how did you get them? From this listserv, you just put it out there and said?
I just put it out there. I at the time, it was called a listserv of women writers. There were several that were kind of around, and I focused on trying to recruit women of different kinds of writing background. A few of my friends I roped into it right away, and actually they're all still involved, and there are a few other writers that are still involved from that very first meeting. And of course, you know, it was scary and strange, and I don't know these women, and I didn't know how we were going to do it exactly, but everybody kind of pooled their resources and came together to say, you know what, this is really a good idea. This is something that needs to happen. We can see how this is going to help girls. And for women, it was really kind of fun for them, too, to get away from the computer and their solitary writing environment and come together with girls.
And how did you know who to match with whom?
You know, that's still something that we work on because in L.A., it's so spread out. Transportation is so difficult. Most of our women writers, or many of them, live on the west side. A lot of the girls from the program come from the east side or the south of L.A., and it's a challenge to make that match stick and make it work so that women can meet on a regular basis with a girl. We look at all kinds of things as well. We look at, do they have parents that can help drive them? What are the girls' writing interests? Are they interested in poetry or screenwriting, or do they even know? And we really put the women through a lot of training to help support them to be open and flexible and really be effective mentors to these girls.
Now, that's really interesting. Training. Who's training these women writers?
You know,
what does that involve?
It's quite intensive. We just actually held an all-day training yesterday for our first group of new volunteers for this season. So we had 25 new women, which was just fabulous. And I work very closely with Kirsten Giles. She works in the automotive industry developing training materials for that industry. So she knows a lot about training and how to present an effective in-person and online training. And we've developed it over the years. We keep shaping it every year. We tweak it a little bit more, but it draws from a lot of different things, pedagogy techniques, editing techniques, psychological development of girls. We've drawn a lot of professional resources to build this training to really allow women to see the kind of girls that are in the program and how they need to modify some of the way that they might approach writing to be able to offer a positive environment, a supportive and encouraging environment, and be kind of the best person they can be.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Karen Teller. She is the founder of Write Girl, which is a nonprofit literacy program for underserved teenage girls in the LA area from ages 13 to 18. You've got your screenwriters, you've got your other professional women, and now you have your young women. Take me through a workshop, a day.
You know, we started with a model that we haven't changed very much all these years. We do at least one workshop a month, sometimes two. They're usually all-day events where we bring in experts. We also utilize the mentors that we have in our pool of volunteers. We give the girls kind of an immersion in a genre. So if it's journalism, they would, you know, do all kinds of activities, small group discussions, interactive activities related to journalism. If it's songwriting, screenwriting, poetry, then in each of those day-long workshops, a girl gets kind of this whole entire full-day experience working with that genre. And it's become a challenge for us because every year we have to reinvent what that curriculum is. What does that day look like? Some of our girls have been with us for 3, 4, and 5 years.
They can say it along with you, you mean.
Yeah. So it's great. It's really exciting and fun for the women to be able to be creative like that. And, you know, we really have to challenge ourselves. What are we going to do that's going to make girls inspired to write and keep them coming back?
All right. So that's the workshop part of this. But what's the one-on-one part? Explain that whole mentoring process to me.
Absolutely. We match women writers with young girls, with teenage girls. They're all either middle school or high school girls. And they meet on a weekly basis all over the city. So they meet at coffee shops, at libraries, community centers, and then they attend those group workshops together as well. So, you know, in some ways we look at what is the magic of Write Girl and what is it that's allowed us to have success with girls. And partly it's the combination of things. They work with a mentor. They come to these group workshops, and then they participate in other activities. They do readings at bookstores together. And at the end of the season, we publish a book. So this whole combined effort is really what allows a girl to go through a significant transformation.
Give me some success stories. Tell me how it worked for Marianne or for Susie or whatever.
That's the thing that puts me to sleep at night and wakes me up in the morning, is knowing what our girls are doing beyond high school. You know, one of the reasons we got the award from Michelle Obama, one of the things that we've managed to keep for 14 years is 100% success rate in sending all of our seniors not only to graduate high school but on to college.
Are you kidding? Every girl that's participated in your program has gone on to college?
Yes, 100% for 14 years. We have the charts. We have the colleges they've gone to. We track them. We just don't let a girl out of our midst.
How many girls?
It changes every year depending on how many.
Well, total. How many total so far?
We have over 500 over the last 14 years, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't keep as good records at the very beginning in terms of the numbers, and but it varies from 25 to 50 girls every year.
So tell me about some of these girls.
So one of our girls now is working on nuclear security issues in Washington, D.C. She became very passionate about wanting to have conversations at the intersection of nuclear security and nuclear power. So she's in D.C. furthering that conversation and helping with that very important global issue. We have another girl who's now a journalist with the Huffington Post, pursuing a career in journalism. We have another girl who just got a deal with HBO for her own TV show.
Get out.
Deal.
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, they're just fearless. You know, that's one of the qualities that we're always trying to encourage in the girls, is developing their confidence, developing their voice, their ability to speak out and propose their ideas. And they've just, you know, not only, you know, thrived and just exploded with all of those skills, but the thing I think that maybe is the most moving for me is that many of our girls want to pursue careers in service. They graduate from college and they want to help their community. They want to help the world. They want to do something meaningful. And they want to mentor others in some way. And that, for me, is like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding? Like, I never knew Write Girl would have that kind of an impact.
On social activism.
Yes.
Now, what about the mentors? Talk to me about some of these women and what they've gotten out of it and how that's worked out for them.
Yeah, the women are amazing. I mean, they're all, you know, different genres. And in L.A., as in other cities, I imagine, writers tend to congregate with their own genre. So screenwriters come together or poets come together, songwriters, and they end up being very isolated in their own writing genre. And here is an organization that brings them together. So, you know, just this weekend we had 25 women, and they were, you know, marketers, songwriters, you know, fiction writers, memoir writers, and they're all in the room together, all sharing this passion for wanting to inspire girls and come together to do that. So that's a very exciting thing to be able to create. And we've seen people develop writing partners, help each other, change careers, change, you know, what they're doing in their writing career to pursue a different genre. And that kind of a network and community is really invaluable.
And the participants on both sides, the mentors and the mentees, are really committed to this, and they really do show up every week.
There's always a few people that don't make as strong of a commitment, both from the girls and the volunteers, but it's a really small percentage. I think most of the girls and mentors that are coming to the program are coming with a pretty strong commitment at the very beginning. And that's really helpful. So they sort of set their own goal of that they want to do this and that they're going to step up and contribute the time and energy. So the great majority of women and girls that participate are fully in and fully committed and showing up regularly on time, giving of their time and energy. And the women all say that they get back more than they give, that the girls themselves and the community as a whole is just such an inspiring environment and such a positive, uplifting place to be that it just keeps the women and the girls coming back.
It seems so logical that this should go nationwide. You're ready to do that, Karen?
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, we do want to expand, and we've talked about it a lot over the years, and we've held back a little bit because we didn't want to overextend ourselves. It's always challenging to find the financial resources to operate, and we know that would be a much bigger challenge on a national scale. We also have a very intensive program, so, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. The matching is complicated. The workshops are complex. The whole education support of helping a girl go to college is a very intensive separate program. So all of these things are, you know, done at such a detailed high level that we wouldn't want to sacrifice any of that to expand the program. So and there's no shortage of girls here in LA.
For sure.
You know, that we would love to be able to reach. So we've kind of made a decision for the moment to really stay focused on LA and build some connections with other organizations and other programs elsewhere. And we've sort of dipped the toe in the water in some other places.
Do you take a salary?
Yes, I do now. At the beginning, I did not. And then I went part-time. And then eventually we got to a place where we were able to write some grants and make this my full-time job so that I wouldn't have to go somewhere else.
So are you the only paid staff person on Right
No,
Girl?
Actually, we now have two other full-time people besides myself and six part-time employees.
Describe what it must have been like when you found yourself at the White House, the recipient of the 2013 National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award. Did you just feel like you died and went to heaven?
Yeah, that was a very surreal experience. I mean, it was really amazing to have that kind of recognition at the national level for the work we're doing and to connect with some of the other organizations across the country that were also receiving the award. There was just 12 of us, so it was a really small group. And, you know, it was sort of surprising, I think, to walk in the White House and see that it's, you know, I don't know how to describe it, except it wasn't ostentatious. It was just very clearly a place of importance. And Michelle Obama was incredibly real and candid, and she was just a really amazing presence in the room and spoke to each and every young person that was there. We each of the organizations got to bring one of their youth to the event, and she took time to speak to each and every one of them, and I thought that was really, really special.
Who did you bring?
Her name was Jacqueline Uy. She's now in the 12th grade, and she worked with her mentor to prepare for this event and be able to do media interviews.
Huh.
And she has just absolutely blossomed through the whole experience. I mean, I'm sure it's a tremendously life-changing experience. I mean, not very many young people get to go to the White House and meet Michelle Obama. That's just an incredible opportunity. She's now editor at her school paper. She wants to be a journalist. She's really on a very, very exciting track, I think.
That's just the first of a slew of awards for you. What was CNN Hero? I mean, what the heck was that like?
Yeah,
good Lord, Karen.
Yeah, that was really exciting to be selected as a CNN Hero. It was a call that came out of the blue, and they did a lot of background work, a lot of work, reaching out to a lot of the people that we work with, and they did a nice little feature on us that aired on CNN several times and was really fantastic to have, again, national exposure of the work we're doing was really phenomenal.
So I'm guessing that with all this exposure, it's not so difficult drumming up funds, which tends to be the more onerous part of nonprofit work.
It's definitely a little easier this year with that kind of recognition, but it's still a struggle. You know, it's difficult to really compete sometimes with some of the organizations that have a little bit more of sort of an urgent nature. And we are a little bit silent, you know, like you're not going to see the transformation in a girl for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a long, you know, process. A girl is in Right Girl for 9 months, sometimes, you know, at least 9 months for the one season. But most of our girls stay in the program for 4 to 5 years. So that kind of an arc is quite long and difficult for many funders to kind of understand that their funds are it's going to take time.
Immediate gratification.
Right. Right.
Well, that must be hard for the girls too, correct?
Yes.
Who might be
yes.
used to that also.
And the women. It's hard for all of us because it isn't an immediate, like, you go clean up the beach and you see the, you know, impact of your volunteer efforts.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to be in there for the long haul and know that your impact is being felt, even if you don't see the results right away. And, you know, we're always trying to share with the volunteers and our supporters the stories of what our girls are doing beyond college, because that is a collective, you know, that's our collective success. Those are the really visible outcomes of what we're doing that we can all share in.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Karen Teller. She is the founder of Right Girl, which is a nonprofit literacy program for underserved teenage girls in the LA area from ages 13 to 18. Now, you're also involved with incarcerated girls. Talk to me about that part of your program.
Yes, a few years ago, we were invited by the County Office of Education to bring the program to some schools in Los Angeles, including the Road to Success Academy, which is a school up in Santa Clarita for two detention camps for girls. And that was, you know, a huge challenge. Like, is this going to work in this environment? We're going into the school day, so it's a little different. But we kept the Right Girl principles of making it fun and interactive and embedding a lot of educational principles, but making it more game-like, more fun and creative. And it's been incredibly powerful. I mean, these girls, you know, with all of our programs, we have the girls writing about things they know. They write about their neighborhood, their families, their background, their, you know, their mother's cooking. They write about things that they are really experts in. And girls that are incarcerated, boy, they have stories, and they're not telling them. They're not really being encouraged to write them down or share their stories, except for, you know, when we come up there once a week. And they've found it to be really powerful and really inspiring for them to be able to set goals beyond their term.
Have any of your girls' works been published?
Well, we publish all of our girls every year. So we have an arm of Right Girl called Right Girl Publications, where we publish at least one book a year, sometimes two, and try to get all of our girls published to give them that opportunity to get their words in print. It's a huge process with a big editorial team and designers, and we work really hard to make them beautiful books that the girls would be proud to be in. And we've, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, we've won a lot of awards for our books. I like to say they're the most acclaimed books you've never heard of yet.
I can't imagine if somebody's been kind of going through the system, a young girl, and kind of been neglected or ignored, you're really starting from scratch in terms of like putting a verb and a noun together, right? It's not only expressing yourself, it's being able to express yourself in proper English, correct?
Yes, that's true. Although, you know, we're not emphasizing that because that comes over time. The important part of the program is getting a girl to speak and to express her ideas. You know, that confidence that she has something important to say and that she has the reflection and time to cultivate her ideas, that's the key. Because if you focus on the grammar or the structure, the spelling, it tends to shut us down. It makes
for sure.
Makes us feel like we're not good enough. We're not right. We're not good writers.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole program is about getting girls to just get out of that, get out of their own way, and, you know, be confident in themselves. We have a soapbox at every workshop. It's one of my favorite parts of the day, where we literally put up a box and a girl has 30 seconds to rant or rave about anything.
Uh-huh.
And that experience is rare. I mean, you know, we don't have that chance in this world very much to really let it out. What are we feeling? What are we passionate about? And then to be able to encourage a girl to turn that into writing, you know, they all speak, you know, we all speak. So if you can speak, you can write. It's a matter of doing that translation between your verbal ideas and then your written ideas.
It really is that easy? The girls really take to it that quickly?
You know, I mean, yes, we've seen transformation in a girl happen in as short as an hour because we just keep on creating this environment where she feels safe.
Right, I was going to say safe.
We don't judge her. We're not grading her. You know, we really have the luxury outside of the school system of doing something different. And I know that this would be a very worthwhile program for schools to incorporate because it is a precursor to all that comes beyond. We've seen how our work translates into academic success because a girl feels confident. They just suddenly don't have that fear anymore.
And that carries over on a one-to-one with the girl and her mentor. And the matches always seem to work, huh?
Yes, they do. Because I think, you know, the girl is coming with a willingness to be matched with a mentor. The mentor is coming with an openness and a willingness to help a girl. So that initial impetus of wanting to be open and wanting to be helpful, that carries them through. And then, of course, that's part of the work of the organization is helping those pairs along the way, helping them when they're challenged. And they often are with transportation, with communication, with differences in their own approach to writing and their approaches to life. And, you know, our job is to help them navigate those challenges and conflicts or differences.
Does it go beyond the mentoring? Do these girls and these older women become friends?
Yes, absolutely. Many of the mentors continue the relationships well past the girls' graduation from high school, even graduation from college now. And, you know, those relationships are really strong bonds. You know, obviously some more than others, the way all of us develop bonds that are sometimes closer with one than another. But most of the women and girls continue their relationship long past their involvement in Write Girl, and that's been really exciting to see. You know, we don't really talk about it that much because we don't want the mentors to be terrified that they're leaping into a lifelong commitment and relationship.
I understand that. Yeah, I understand that. What do you see as the future of Write Girl?
You know, we did a little program in Peru
couple
years back. Yeah, it was a 12-week program, and it was all translated into Spanish. One of our mentors got a grant from Stanford University and did a program down there under the name Escriba Chica. She just did a literal translation of the name. And we saw how successful it was and how much the girls really thrived and how similar the girls were there than here in terms of needing the opportunity to voice themselves. So we're looking forward to how we could bring the program to other places, and we're actively in discussion with a number of organizations and funders to be able to do so.
So, Karen, as we wrap this up, you've gone from the theater to the corporate world to nonprofit. You've been everywhere. You've done a lot of stuff. And I guess, without putting words in your mouth, this is where you feel you're most comfortable, you're most proud. This is what you were destined to do, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel so lucky. I feel so inspired. I never have a day where I feel like, oh, I have to go do this ever, which is incredible because I certainly felt that in the corporate world. I certainly felt that even as a performer, oh my gosh, I have to do this show again, you know? And now it's every day is a little different, which helps, but also I'm just working with fabulous women, with inspiring young girls that are doing amazing things. And to be able to see the results of all of my effort and all of our effort as an organization to be able to see girls thriving and doing such important things in the world, I mean, I can't think of anything better to do.
Wow. And as I sit in awe of your amazing things, all I can say is thank you and thank goodness for people like Karen Taylor. I really enjoyed getting to know you. You're very inspirational.
Aw, thank you.
Join us for another edition of The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.